All right, we made it. We here, huh? We alive?
Are you excited?
I'm really excited. I'm like, I'm you know, I've been telling people all day, I'm like Leonardo DiCaprio in Titanic. Right? I'm at the table eating with all these people, man. I'm just like, it's great. I started doing films, you know, obviously for the last 10 years independently. This is the first time I've ever had a chance to do a junket or, you know, play at this level in terms of talking to people about my film. And it's a blessing, man. I mean, I never shot a movie for this. You know what I mean? I've always just kind of did my own thing and people found my art or my film. So this has been really, really cool to see people who have seen the film, have ideas, have, you know, love it, hate it, whatever the hell it is. It's great because I'm like, all right, let's talk about it. And it's good because that's what art is, you know? You do this so people could have talking points. You do this so people could remember who you are and what you've done. And this has just been a blessing for me today, yeah.
And it's so timely, too, because the whole human trafficking thing.
Yes.
You know, there's been, like, recent, you know, bills signed and things like that. You know, I mean, it's definitely top of mind, you know, in terms of what's going on with that. Was the subject matter something that was really... that appealed to you?
Yeah. You know what's interesting? I would have never. I'm just sitting there telling you guys as a basketball player, black guy, right? I'm like, this is not what I was going to do. I was never going to make, or I never envisioned myself making a film about trafficking. What happened was I have a 13-year-old daughter, and she was 12 at the time, but I got this email from the school where they were telling us that be careful dropping your kids off at the mall as the young kids are being trafficked. And everything in me was like, I looked at the paper and I'm like, is this real? Like the email. And I had never seen that written. I've seen guns. I've seen violence. I've seen, you can name it, right, in this world, in the climate. But I had never read trafficked. And that, like, blew my mind. And as I started researching more and more, I found out that in my community, there had been, like, almost 50 girls had been abducted over the course of 3 years. And it was, like, spiking up. And they were telling, you know, they had kids that were helping kids to lure them to the mall. And when I uncovered that, I felt like, why didn't I know that? You know what I mean? And, you know, just as a black man, you already, you know, with your kids, you deal with speaking to them about so much. This was like another layer because I said, okay, well. Then I was like, well, they don't really get us because we're black and they don't want us. So I'm like, okay. So then I found out that 65% of the women that are trafficked domestically are black. And that's when everything spun off the rails for me because I was like, okay, this has to be told. So I want to educate my daughter. I want to educate my friends, my nieces. You know what I mean?
And do you know why the 65% is black?
Well, what's happening is it's underserved market. So it's like, so you're talking like Baltimore, Chicago, you know, Oakland, you're talking about high-end areas where kids are most likely to be abducted in terms of this world. Mm-hmm. And we kind of chalk a lot of this stuff up to like, oh, they just pimping and she's, you know, being a prostitute. No, man, this is like girls are being taken. You know what I mean? Chances are that girl that you might see in Oakland that's on the street with a pimp is actually trafficked.
Right.
She's from somewhere else.
Right.
She's from Texas, she's from Chicago, she's from Baltimore, and you understand the severity of what's going on. Or you understand that they have, like, you know, sex hotels where they actually grab these kids, shoot them up, like we did in the film. I try to demonstrate how this happens, and a girl wakes up, you know, 8 weeks later, 5 weeks later, and she's had 500 partners. You know what I mean? This is real. And that was so disturbing to me. And it haunted me, you know what I mean? Because I was thinking about all this other stuff I was going to write and do. And I said, man, I got to do this. And something just spoke to me about the film. And everything I had in me, I was just like, you know, as an independent filmmaker, you don't only get one chance to do a movie. You know what I mean? So this was my chance. I was like, okay, I'm going to do this movie. And now I got to figure out a very smart way to put a thriller or something on top of it to where we can wrap it to where people could actually eat the candy. Right, and then say, oh, okay, I got the medicine, right? And that was a hard part based on the fact that I could never go to a library and find a movie like this that was with trafficking. Everything I was looking at was, you know, documentary style. It was very hard-hitting things. I was like, okay, that wouldn't transition to me to who I want to speak to. I wanted the movie to actually open up, be viewed as a thriller, make people go, oh, I want to see that. And then when you get there, you get a message.
Yeah. Yeah. Were you familiar? Did you get familiar when I think there was a couple of series?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I started watching everything. I mean, once you kind of track down this and you start seeing it all. Yeah. The documentaries, I mean, the stuff in Mexico, what I felt like was like the most horrific stuff I have. I mean, I'm seeing girls get killed online. I'm like, this is nuts.
Yeah.
And the fact that it's living right there, all you got to do is look at it and no one is saying anything. I mean, now there's people trying to stand up. But I took a really, really big step on the film based on my own daughter. You know, I was just like, this, I got to say something to do something to where, you know, the 18, 19, 20, 25-year-old college girl is like, oh, really? That could happen to me? Yes. Yes.
Because everybody thinks that it's somewhere else.
And that's exactly right. It's right here. No, it's right here. And we try to reference that, like, even like the nail shops. You know what I mean? Even the massage parlors. It's like I see police officers parked right in front of the massage parlors at 3 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, okay, they're not massaging in there. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? And that's interesting to me based on the fact that when you start really looking at it and the severity of, like, we all looking the other way. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Is there a typical age?
Well, no, because what's happening is, I mean, you have typical people that are trafficking for different things. They're trafficking kids. So, I mean, there are kids that are 3, 4, 5, and 6 years old being trafficked. All the way to adults, you know what I mean? Most recently, what I thought was interesting was in Texas 4 months ago, middle of the night, 1 o'clock in the morning, in front of a Walmart, I want to say in Texas, a lady goes out, getting off work, she knocks on the big rig door, the truck is like right in the middle of the parking lot by itself, the guy slumped over, she knocks, he doesn't wake up, she goes and gets the security, they finally come, knock on the thing, the dude wakes up, you know, he's rattled, they feel like it's something weird, the police is patrolling. The police, have you guys seen the story? The police pulls up to the truck, makes the guy get out the truck. He's like, oh, I was just getting ready to drive off. Yes, they go open up the back of the truck. It was like 8 dead bodies and 30 girls.
Yeah.
Right in the back. Yeah. He was trafficking.
Because the refrigeration system broke down. Yeah,
he was trafficking girls. And it was dead. You're being transported with bodies and girls gagged and bound in the back of his truck. And it's just sitting in Walmart. He's on his way, you know, and I said, okay. That's when I, you know, and for my film, that's when I really was like, okay, do you, because I, this is not a leap of faith with the girls in the truck. This is what happens, you know, or how the convenience store works, that the actual convenience store that we were at, there had been one or two girls abducted from that station. So I just became like really aware and heightened about what I was writing and what I was trying to do and decided I was going to make a movie not for critics, but for humanity.
So speaking to your earlier point, how did you approach that balance then of having this movie with, you know, that addresses social concerns
right.
in an accurate manner, but then also having like this fun, entertaining thriller aspect?
Yeah, I started ripping from the headlines. So that's how I wrote. As I started, I originally wrote one draft and I was like, okay, this is too dark. Deion, you gotta figure this out. And I started reading the headlines, and the headlines is what actually navigated me to write a better script. Because I started finding out, you know, there was one story about a journalist who walked into a ring, and, you know, it was one story about a truck driver who pulled over another friend of his that was driving who had been fired. It just was so much stuff. And I eventually said, okay, I'm going to loop a thriller, a story in on here. And then I became very connected to the Paula Patton character, the Bria character. A lot of what I wrote for her is a lot about my life, right? So I'm a firm believer, like, in life, what God does to you a lot of times is sometimes he'll strip everything away from you and leave you naked and vulnerable so you can understand what it is you're really supposed to do. So I don't expect all you guys to believe that, but what happens is what I thought this character was, here she was, she's in love, or she thinks she's in love, she doesn't really know. She's a journalist. She's trying to fight for this job where she feels like it's the job of her all job. She's mad about some penniless article. And ultimately, she loses everything in order to discover who she really is and what her fight really is. And one of the things that I used in that was John Walsh. I just thought he was, you know, that story was prolific to me. Like, his son was Adam. He lost him. He was kidnapped and killed. And here's a guy who has to go through something like that, but he now goes on to save hundreds of thousands of lives, You know what I mean? And I just felt like, man, this is really dope for my character, Bria, where you could see everything get taken from her and she to be, you know, for her to be rebuilt and reborn into this thing to be able to fight, you know, something as ugly as this, you know? So that's how the thriller came about, you know what I mean? We get a lot of energy around, oh, it feels like it's two movies, right? Oh, it starts like this, then it ends like that.
Yeah.
And I said, well, it's purposely done. And it's not. What's happened is Dante Spinotti is such an incredible cinematographer. He triggers everything in your body. So that was a distinctive thing that we did in the film, which was when the movie opens up, what I was really going for, what we fought for, was to visually have the movie wide. It's wide open. It's green. It's visceral. It's this big, beautiful, classic car. It's, you know, they're in love. It's cinematic. And what happens is the minute that the doorbell rings and they run outside, what people are not noticing is the movie turns into a noir thriller. So all of a sudden now, the parking lot is lit by headlights. The house is dimly lit. They go into a cabin. It's lit by a little lamp in the corner. All of a sudden now, it just ratchets down. And what I wanted to do was make sure that the audience goes down a rabbit hole. And, you know, and that rabbit hole feels different. It doesn't feel like the same movie because the lighting is different. The tension is different. And, man, I'd say, like, one of the movies that shook me up, like this movie, I was hoping to build it that way, was The Vanishing. Mm-hmm. So when I was younger and I watched The Vanishing, for the life of me, I watched that film and you go, oh, okay, well, he going to find her now. Oh, yeah, he going to find her now. Even to the last 5 minutes of that film, you're like, okay, when's she going to come out? And then they said, no, she's not coming out. Like, this is it. You know what I mean? And I just thought to myself, how amazing, 25 years later, I'm still talking about The Vanishing, because it basically was something that triggered every hair in your body, which was like you going to the gas station, she never came out. And what is this unsolved mystery and what happens to her? Then you figure out on the other side of that, here's a guy working to abduct somebody his whole life. He's failed. He's tried again. Right. I mean, he is the epitome of evil. And ultimately his thing comes together in order to wreck your life. Right. And then it's just so wow. That movie always, like when I was shooting this, I said, man, to me, it's like a time and age where you now have to break the rules again cinematically. Everybody wants to formulate it. Oh, didn't they do that? Didn't they do that? And I said, man, I'm an independent film dude, man. I'm going to make the movie that I feel like going to jar me, move me. You know what I mean? And I felt like Seven did the same thing. You know, a lot of people didn't like Seven at first, but Seven, it broke all the rules.
It did.
Right? So at the very end, you're like, okay, what's the FedEx man doing? Right? And he's like, why is he coming up here? Right? And you're like, what the hell? What just, that's his wife? Right? And it just flips you where you're like, that's not supposed to happen. And I felt like those thrillers are ones that live with you because they don't allow you to prepare. You know what I mean? They allow you, you're actually on the ride. And I felt like we did a really good job on a very small independent level in this film to be able to take you on a ride and not let you know where you're going. You know what I mean? Until you get off. Until you're like, okay, this is over, right? Yeah, it's over. And
it was never over. Yeah. It just kept going. I was screaming like, oh my God. There was a point where I literally turned from the thing. Just tell me what happens later. I can't. I want to commend you for the roller coaster because that it absolutely was.
Oh, thank
was.
You.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Well, did Paula know what she was getting into here? Because, I mean, she goes on this journey that just, you know, from this beautiful, glamorous weekend with her boyfriend where, you know, they're going to have this wonderful time up in the cabin.
Yeah.
To, like, what she goes through physically, you know, I mean, it just...
She was, you know what, Paula was, I had to beg to get Paula, a lot of work to pitch to her what I was trying to do. But the one thing I think resonated with her was I thought Paula was amazing in Deja Vu. So I always just, my first conversation with her was like, why aren't you doing more of that? You know what I mean? Like, the comedies are great. Like, the energy is there. You're so beautiful. I'm like, why don't most, you know, we see more black actresses stretch out is what I pitched to her. And I know there's limited roles at times. You know what I mean? And the industry is not really designed for us to have these gigantic, you know, black and brown people to have these moments where you can really go there. But I pitched her that, and I said, I think it's just something about her that I knew she could do it because Deja Vu was incredible. She has so many great moments with Denzel. And then she had already played on a bigger scale with the Tom Cruise or whatever that movie was, you know. And then the rom-com. So for you to make people laugh, that's a really hard thing to do. She's not a comedian. So for her to have those little beats, she was like my first choice. And I chased her as a first choice until she was like, I get it. I said, no, let's strip all that off. You know what I mean? Let's take all this, the makeup, the wardrobe, the shoes, like, let's just rip it off, man, and see what happens. And she's incredible. Every stunt she did on her own, every jump, every scream, every moment is her. As a matter of fact, when the car skids on the cliff, she's in the passenger seat with the stuntman.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's real. And I said, man, but that's also a testament to just the spirit of independent film now. You know what I mean? Like, I think all of us kind of looped in together and was like, yo, we can make something really special. And we all bonded together. There is no tomorrow. There's no money, right? Like, we don't have nothing. We don't have shit, right? And I'm like, y'all shoot this now because we can't come back. And to this day, like, I've done this for 11 years now, I've never been able to afford to ever go back to shoot a reshoot. So what normally happens is, like, the talent leaves, and then I'm still there with another skeleton crew shooting B-roll, shooting ground, shooting car, right? This was working all until the second week of the movie. I was like, okay, if I shoot one more night, I'm going to die. Like, y'all.
And then there's post.
That's right. Then there's post. Yeah. And Melissa, oh, man. Melissa's probably the best get I've ever had. Outside of Dante. What was great about this film was I didn't cut as I shot. I shot the film and then it set for a minute and then I found Melissa because I knew I had to find the right editor. They're so hard to find because you find so many editors that have a big name but they can't cut. I don't know if you guys know that.
I
didn't know that. So I'm like, damn, you cut that? And then you get in there like, you cut that? Right? He's like, no, that's not
it.
Yeah, that's not what you cut on that one. So I was like, then you look under, you see five other names. You're like, oh, okay, well, who's this guy? Right?
My assistant.
And so Melissa was the first time I ever, like, I got it right. Melissa was the first time I met with her. She had watched my film Supremacy, and we met, and she was like, I get it. She was like, I know exactly what, and I said, man, if I could just find the humanity and the energy. And the minute I seen the dailies of Paula and I seen the dailies of the car and her running by the Capitol, I said, man, this is going to be a special movie. You know what I mean? We could cut it right. And Melissa was also great because as a woman, she was able to fall into the character of Rosalind and Paula at a very high angle in terms of, like, knowing how they feel, what they're going through. It's only so much I can do in terms of, like, you know, Melissa would be like, Dion, just give it one more moment because look at her. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right. Right? You know what I mean? Like, you're absolutely right. You know what I mean? And the tension part was a really dynamic thing between me and Melissa because it was a man and a woman talking about tension. So I'm like, no, keep going. Like, you're saying, like, no, no. And I said, no, let him go for the ride, Melissa, and then we'll bring her out. You know what I mean? Because if we go for the ride and everyone's like, I can't take it, when she finally opens the door, it was like, this is a new world, a new life for her. You know what I mean? So Melissa Kent was great. She just finished cutting my other movie as well. I love her.
You're a really good cast.
That's all we have
time
for today.
What?
Yeah.
We just started.
Yeah!
What are we doing?
We need you.
I love them. We
okay.
Thank you guys so much.
Congratulations.
I hope you guys like the movie. And I just want to tell you all, thank you so much for being here and doing what you guys do. And anything I could do to help support what you're writing, please just let me know, man. We're praying that the movie can make some noise, but thank you.
What's the other film you just did?
I just finished a movie called Motivated Seller with Michael Ealy, Dennis Quaid, and Megan Good, which is a psychological thriller, which is really, really cool.
It's like about a bad real estate agent.
Ah, gee, almost.
Hey,
man.
Thanks for breaking the rules, because when Omar's character gets
I
won't write about it, but I actually thought to myself, like, this is not supposed to happen until at least 30 minutes.
That's right, that's right, that's right, yeah. Yeah, and that actually, that moment in time actually pulls the rug from under you.
It does, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It yeah, I've watched this movie with a bunch of audiences and they're like, wait a minute.
That wasn't supposed to happen.
No, he's going to get us. No, he ain't getting up.
That's what I thought.
No, this is about this woman. You know what I mean? It's about her journey.
Yeah.
Anyways, thank you guys so much.
You
guys are fantastic. Thank you.
Thank you.